Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. There are activists in our community who hope to bring our attention to issues they feel are significant. It is a vital part of our community if we hope to see and understand others who live in Northumberland. Recently, two such groups want to focus our attention. The first event is the Trans Day of Remembrance. It is taking place this Saturday at the Coburg Police Station and Victoria Hall. It will commemorate those who have died due to violence and bigotry against trans people. It is the sixth time a local vigil has been held. Ashley Bowman, a local leader, will tell us about trans people in our community and what is being done to end this violence and hate. So let's begin with the Trans Day of Remembrance. I'm so pleased to have with me today Ashley Bowman, chapter leader of PFLAG, an organization for families, friends, and others who support the LGBTQ2+ community. Welcome to Consider This.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What is the Trans Day of Remembrance?
Trans Day of Remembrance is a day that is was created to memorialize initially the murder of Rita Hester. She was an African-American trans woman who was brutally murdered in her apartment on November 28, 1998. Her murder has yet to be solved. And that's quite common when there is regarding transgender-based violence and murders. So the first Transgender Day of Remembrance was held on November 20th, 1999. And since then, occurs annually. And yeah, so it's just a day to kind of memorialize and honor those who have been murdered as a result of transphobia or anti-transgender hatred and or prejudice. And the day is observed to bring attention to the continued violence endured by the transgender and non-binary or gender diverse communities. And it's just an important and ongoing issue of human rights regarding trans advocacy.
Now, I understand there's going to be something going on November 20th in Coburg. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, so actually, this is the sixth annual Transgender Day of Remembrance happening in Coburg. The first one took place on November 20th, 2016. So there was a small vigil held in the evening, and in the day, the Coburg Police Services raised a trans flag at half mast. And every year since then, we've always observed it as a vigil. So on Saturday, from 1:30 until 2 in front of Victoria Hall, there'll be sign making and an information session that people can come and check out. We'll also have on display the names of all the lives that have been lost in the last year, because also the Trans Day of Remembrance just brings to light the amount of violence that we see every year regarding the trans and gender diverse community. And then 2 p.m. we'll be having an afternoon candlelight vigil, which we will walk through the downtown to Victoria Park and through Victoria Park to the gathering place that's across from the Lioness Pavilion for a moment of silence. And then later in the evening, there'll just be a virtual candlelight vigil, which will be broadcast live on our Facebook page. And it'll just essentially be a candle lit with some somber music playing in the background, and people are welcome to pop in and join for however long they would like. And we will also be having be posting the names for that broadcast. It's also Trans Awareness Week, so we're promoting information and community education on our Facebook page. And following that, on Monday, November 22nd, I will be presenting the pronoun usage and trans advocacy in Northumberland webinar that I have available. The presentation was designed specifically for community service providers, local non-for-profit agencies, and small businesses, helping them to create a more safer and inclusive space.
When anyone uses the word transgender, what does it describe?
So transgender is kind of used as an umbrella term, and it just is regarding how people present their gender identity. Sorry, just one moment. I'm just going to bring something up here because I have a thorough definition. But yeah, it's typically used as an umbrella term, predominantly as an adjective. I will say, though, there is a lot of intricacies when writing about the trans community. And I would just like to note that it's never verbed. Like, it's technically grammatically incorrect to say transgendered, because it kind of, it's an othering form of language, but just using it as an adjective is the best way. And it describes a person who does not identify with the gender that they were assigned with at birth. So just to further elaborate on that, it refers to individuals with a diverse gender identities and expressions that differ from stereotypical gender norms. And so for an example, someone who is a trans woman were assigned male at birth, but they identify as female, and a trans man is assigned female at birth and identifies as male.
All right. Lots of interesting things that you said there, but unless we're really good grammaticians, I don't think we might fully understand what you're talking about. So I think that last bit was really key. So somebody is born a particular gender, but then as they go through their life, they identify as something else. And that person is known by the umbrella term as transgender. Is that correct?
Yeah, so it's, again, it's just in the very basic of the definition, it just refers to a person who identifies differently than the gender or sex they were assigned with at their birth.
Do we know how many Canadians identify as transgender?
Yes, it is. The last kind of statistics that I've found on this subject, It's quite high, and definitely more than you would realize. But following that, something I also teach in my pronoun usage and trans advocacy seminar is the fact that when you are using like pronoun usage, you need to kind of stop making assumptions of someone's gender, because you don't actually know how they identify unless you ask them, and you can't kind of make the presumptions just on their general appearance. So a good thing to do definitely is to use the gender neutral pronoun they, their, them.
Okay, but I think my question was, do we know how many Canadians identify? Do you have a number, a figure?
Oh, sorry. No, I don't have a current number or figure of that. I've just, the most recent thing I read was just that there was a survey put out in 2019 where it was open to Canadians who are trans or non-binary youth. And in Ontario, there were 337 participants in that survey, but that would be for 18 years and under. But that just kind of gives a pretty good indication of who filled out that survey.
I understand that the census for 2021 is asking the question for the first time, allowing people to identify as transgender. How is that significant?
That will really help, as, again, that you asked that question about, like, how many people in Canada, and I can't give an exact figure of that. So the fact that the current census is going to be reflective of that information is really important to the progression of advocacy and human rights regarding trans individuals, as they are often ostracized and face a lot of violence. Another big hindrance is access to health care. So when we have more official numbers like that, I think it's just easier to know something like, hey, like we have X percentage of trans and non-binary people living in Ontario or Canada, and it's important that they are able to access healthcare, because a big deterrent and difficulty of being trans or non-binary is the fact that it's really difficult to access healthcare. There's sometimes issues regarding what their sex is on their birth certificate. Having to change their names can be difficult. Any kind of accessing healthcare professionals who are open or understanding or even knowledgeable about trans health, especially transitioning, especially the use of hormone replacement therapy. I know locally that is a big issue, is the lack of access to healthcare services for trans or non-binary individuals, and also the financial burden as well. It can be really difficult, and sometimes what's needed isn't covered by OHIP.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that in a minute. I want to come back to identifying people in the community. Now, I know you work a great deal with the LGBTQ2 community. How many people have identified themselves as being transgender to you and your group?
I would say a significant percentage, enough that one of my main talking points constantly when I speak publicly, whether it is at the Trans Day of Remembrance, there's also a more positive day called the Trans Day of Visibility. And but the number one thing I always advocate for is access to healthcare. And it's just important that people have access to knowledgeable, affirming, and accessible health care.
No, I appreciate the issue, and I'd like to talk about it more in a second. I'm trying to get my head around how many people in our community are transgender. What to give us a sense of how many people living around us are transgender. Can you give me some sense of it?
I would just say it's hard, because I'm going to say there's probably many people who are trans or non-binary that have not talked to me that exist in this community. I don't know if I'm always 100% go-to for people with my services, although they're like available to anyone to access and everyone's welcome. Yeah, I can't say. I would just like to say that there are trans and non-binary people living in our community. Many of them are my good friends, but yeah, I can't put a percentage, because I know it's going to be higher than my own kind of like personal experience or people that come to me or reach out to me through PFLAG or the COVID Queer Collective.
So now let's talk some more about these challenges that you were mentioning before. You've clearly identified healthcare as being a critical issue for the community, but what is it like? Can you help describe what it's like for these people that you know day to day to live in our community, to live in places like Cobourg and Port Hope and Beauty and Warkworth and Campbellford? What do they tell you about the life they live and how they're treated?
I think for sure, and what I've witnessed online and what I've been told, is transphobia. It runs pretty rampant here. There's a high prevalence of people getting verbally assaulted. It just can be really difficult. You know, that's not to say that always happens, but it's definitely something that trans and non-binary people have to deal with on a daily basis. That statistically has been proven. But I do see this area growing as well. And just on a more positive note, like, I do get told often that, like, people like the fact that there is kind of an active LGBTQ community here. There's visibility, there's support. Earlier this year, when I held kind of a a trans day of visibility, like scavenger hunt, that was really well attended, and I got a lot of positive feedback from that, and that's really great, and I'm very excited to continue doing the visibility and community education component, because I want all of the community to know that like trans rights are important, especially in rural communities. But the thing about living in a more rural community is you're not going to always have as much access to resources or support systems that you might get in a more urban setting. And I would actually personally like to see that changed. And I think, again, with the growth of our community, that that's going to be coming in the future.
Now, statistics show that members of this community, the transgender community and also the LGBTQ2 community, are 3 times as likely to become victims of violence. Are you aware of the level of violence that is committed against these members of our community?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am very aware of that. That is another one of my talking points. Actually, speaking of that, a call to action that I kind of wanted to do to coincide with the Transgender Day of Remembrance is I would like at a federal level that the Trans Day of Remembrance be included in the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence that happens on November 25th, which is the it's the day, the International Day of the Elimination of Violence Against Women. But because it's the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, it would be nice to see that start with the Trans Day of Remembrance, because the trans community and gender diverse community are constantly dealing with high prevalence of physical assault. And I mean, I think every year since I've been doing the Trans Day of Remembrance, there had to have been at least 100 people murdered. And they count, it's like every year. So almost 1,000 people since I've been doing this have been murdered around the world who identify as trans or non-binary. And that's only including the reported instances of violence. There's many, you know, there's violence happening to people every day, or people getting murdered every day that, like, cases haven't been solved.
You've mentioned now a couple of times in our conversation the notion of gender identification through the use of pronouns. We see this on social media feeds where people will place beside their name he, him, or she, her, and other things. How does this facilitate an ongoing awareness of gender identification?
Yeah, I'll do my best to break it down. So the reason why it's important to just use identifiable pronouns is like, that's just, you're just helping someone with their identity. And it's just the simplest and most positive thing you can do. It makes them feel welcome. It makes them feel accepted. So, as the use of personal pronouns are becoming more widespread, and let's see. So we usually assign gender-specific pronouns, he or she, to people around us, but we might not know what their gender identity or expression is. You know, subconsciously we make those assumptions. So that when you normalize pronoun use, and it just, yeah, when you identify yourself, I see it at the end of emails, that's a really easy thing. Or now on Zoom calls, people will have it beside their name. It's also easier, and it makes it easier for when everyone's doing it, then people aren't singled out, you know? It's not like, oh, that person, you know, is the only person that identifies their pronouns. Like, what's their deal? It just normalizes everything, and with that normalization, it's just more comfortable, and it just becomes a thing that people do. Like, I see it so much more now than I did, say, maybe 5 years ago, or even when I started doing the Transgender Day of Remembrance. There's also a lot of different gender pronouns that are unfamiliar. It's really just important to ask people, but at the same time, not kind of single them out. Misgendering is when you use the incorrect pronouns. And that happens quite often when people are transitioning, and it's okay. But it's just important to remember to correct yourself and just work on getting it right. And if someone else around you makes a mistake, it's just important to correct them, and because you don't want to further embarrass the individual. And if you're consistently using the wrong pronouns, misgendering a person, it just can be really difficult. It can be considered a form of harassment. And I'll just say this. So when someone is referred to with the wrong pronoun, it can make them feel disrespected, invalidated, dismissed, alienated, or dysphoric, or often all of the above. And it is a privilege to not have to worry about which pronoun someone is going to use based on how you perceive their gender or your gender. And just that if you have this privilege yet fail to respect someone's gender identity, it's not only disrespectful, but it's also hurtful and oppressive.
What positive things are we seeing in our community that are moving us toward more accepting space for transgender people?
Personally, what I've had several places like reach out to me to do my webinar, because I think the basics of like community education is a main component. And as I mentioned earlier, with that survey that was done recently with trans and non-binary youth, there were three recommendations that were specific for Ontario, and that was implement knowledge affirming and accessible healthcare services and providers, and to develop a public education on the importance of using correct pronouns and chosen names, including the consequences of not doing so. And the third is improve outreach and support for families to help them understand their trans and or non-binary youth, and to help youth feel safe at home. So it's just right now I've seen a lot of changes. It's nice to see people being more inquisitive instead of just like brushing it off as some fad or just because they don't understand it. People just want the knowledge that is out there, because as we progress, like, people feel more comfortable being themselves probably now than ever before. And it's important that we are creating safer spaces for people and just having them more accessible. And it's just a matter of like minor things. Like, for example, if you are working in an office and a client comes in and asks you where the washroom is, you don't say the ladies' washroom is over there. You just say the washrooms are around the corner. Like things like that.
How important is it for our political leaders and our institutional leaders to be taking these steps and leading by example?
Definitely. I always think it is important, because a lot of people do still look up to political leaders. And it is really interesting as a queer advocate, how often I do see like gender and sexuality politicized. Like transgender and non-binary community is always being brought up. Like a few years ago when the federal government did decide to make a rule to not assume anyone's gender, unless, you know, like they ask, which is fine. Like it caused a really weird riff with a lot of people just not accepting the fact that you just weren't making assumptions anymore. But it is small things like that definitely help the progression of a full and equal society. And when I say that, I mean for everybody. In the queer community, it's still really difficult. I know trans and non-binary people have a very difficult time accessing employment, accessing social services, accessing housing services. A lot of organizations will dead name, which would be like using a client's name that they don't identify with anymore. It was the name that they were given at birth, and that might not be their chosen name that might not be how they identify. And I know it can be a really, really difficult because, again, using a person's new or preferred name and their preferred pronouns is an important aspect in respecting their gender identity, and it helps their confidence and it just helps them with a sense of belonging. Because again, with all the violence that the trans and non-binary community face, there's also a high prevalence of suicide and self-harm.
How can people become involved on November 20th?
I encourage everybody in the community to come out to our events. We'll be there for half an hour before the vigil where people can come and ask questions. They can come and participate in the vigil. I am always available to speak to people. I can hang around afterwards. People can always reach out to me too online during the day, but it would be great to get a good amount of people out. It's the first event we've kind of had in person really since the pandemic. We did hold a rally in August, but yeah, this is kind of going back to our traditional roots for the Transgender Day Remembrance Vigil. So it will be nice to kind of be out and visible again, because I feel that is always a big component of the work that I do and the work that our organizations do, is just the visibility aspect, which is very hard to do virtually. I think it's much more impressive and provoking when we're visible out on the street and things like that.
Ashley Moman, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Ashley Bowman, chapter leader of PFLAG, an organization for families, friends, and others who support the LGBTQ2 community. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.